We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to...
Welcome to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here tonight with Cindy McGee from Show Me Patriots, and we're here tonight with a full lineup for you. We've got a great show set up for you tonight. A lot of things going on here in Missouri at the end of the legislative session. Hi, Cindy. Thanks for sitting in with me tonight again.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
You can still hear me okay, right? We're having some technical difficulties on my end. I just want to make sure I don't fall apart on everybody. We got a lot of stuff going on. Okay. Oh, that was really loud. Did you hear that?
A little bit, but it wasn't bad.
That's going away right now. Okay. Okay.
You got to love technology.
Well, I guess you can. I hate it because I'm falling apart.
Well, I'm actually with you, but...
Oh, okay. So, anyway... A lot of stuff going on tonight here in Missouri. Let's just go down the lineup. We have Bob McCarty that's going to be on with us a little bit later on tonight. He's got a new book out, The Clapper Memo, Bob McCarty, from the author of 3 Days in August. Bob does a great job of writing. He's an incredible investigative researcher and a great blogger. Does just great, really great work. He's got just really good investigative mind, and he has been writing these incredible books on corruption in the military. And I'll tell you, you know, with as much respect as you have for the military, I don't understand why people join the military anymore with what happens to these folks sometimes that you see. And Bob's going to be on a little bit later to talk to us a little bit about that. And we're almost... at the end of the legislative session, and I thought I got rid of that noise. Let's see if I can get rid of it again. We're almost at the end of the legislative session, and thank God.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for that.
Time to celebrate.
Yeah, get him out of Jefferson City, ship him home. But we're going to have Tom Martz on with us from the Locke and Smith Foundation, and we're going to talk about a few pieces of legislation that have gone through that are absolutely ridiculous, and some other bills that are Yankee Doodle legislation type bills. There never seems to be a never-ending supply of that kind of stuff coming out of Jefferson City. And later on, we're going to have a full studio with us tonight. We've got a large panel of folks that are going to join us. Last week, Desi. They're feeling the heat of the pushback from the folks on Common Core. I'm sure they expect this all to go under the radar. And if it wasn't for the great work of Gretchen Logue and Missouri Education Watchdog, this all would have gone under the radar. Yeah, I mean, they did a great job of initiating it and putting it in anyway with all of the work and whistleblowing that's been going on. But without Gretchen, it would be full force. And they're absolutely feeling the heat. And they were forced last week to hold a series of meetings to kind of address the public's concerns. And they held a meeting in every congressional district here in the state. And what they found out at the meeting was that people are ticked off. And they were not, and most of the folks that attended the meetings were not very appreciative of the way they were treated in the meetings. And we have a panel of 6 folks that are going to be on with us tonight from 5 of the 8 districts that held meetings. So we're pretty well represented across the state, and they all have something very interesting to report about how Desi is trying to spin this and just color it in a positive light on their end and basically lie to the people. So we're going to have a real good panel discussion later on with all those folks that when they join us at about 8 in the 8 o'clock hour. To begin with, let's start off with some other things that happened over the week. I'll tell you, there's a lot of stuff that has just really gotten a burr under my saddle. Where do we start? Okay, let's talk about impeachment a little bit. Impeachment is not a four-letter word. I think somebody needs to inform the people in Jefferson City and the people in Washington, D.C. We've got impeachment situations happening all over the United States, here at home and across the nation. And we cannot get any of these mealy-mouthed, little spineless, wimpy elected people to think impeachment. And I am just burning up mad over it. I cannot understand how we can have a Republican legislature in Missouri, veto-proof Republican majority legislature, and we cannot get these folks in Missouri to start thinking in terms of impeachment. They have got Jay Nixon dead to rights on this Department of Revenue issue. They've got him. They've got documents. They've got everything, and they've got, and they're dancing. We can't get the Attorney General to do anything about it. From Tim Jones this week. Let me see if I can pull it up here again. Again, we're dealing with technology, so it'll just take me a second here. Okay. Oh, this is from the Speaker Tim Jones blog. This week, the Speaker of the House announced, and I'll just kind of read some of this, anticipating that investigations into the Missouri Department of Revenue's scanning and sharing of concealed weapons permits will need to go beyond the length of this year's legislative session, House Speaker Tim Jones is forming a special committee of legislators, prosecuting attorneys, and sheriffs to evaluate if state law was broken during what Republicans call a breach in citizens' trust of state government. Well, okay, it's more than a breach of citizens' trust of state government. I believe the law was actually broken here. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I think that statutes were violated. Am I wrong? Okay.
No, you're right.
Okay. So the Speaker of the House, who, by, write it down, because this is my prediction for today, Tim Jones is the chosen one. He will be the Missouri Republican Party's hand-picked special candidate for our next mayor. We're not going to have a choice, folks. Tim Jones is the one. So I think he's already started campaigning. This is the person who can't pass right to work in Missouri, okay? And he's very squeamish about talking about impeachment, and he's setting up this very special Stonewall committee to report back to the legislature, I believe in September of next of this coming year, on their findings on whether or not anything happened that was wrong or illegal in the Department of Revenue scandal. Okay, and let me just go on here at what I found here. See, Jones said Monday his committee will be bipartisan to include Republicans and Democrats, and that the idea for its formation is based upon a committee Governor Jay Nixon led when he served as Attorney General. Nixon's committee investigated the retention of emails in former Governor Matt Blunt's administration. I just feel that after several months, we don't have a resolution and cooperation from the governor's office, Jones said Monday. We're trying to find out historically whose decision and how far up the chain did it go to begin scanning the information at the Department of Revenue. Excuse me? We don't have enough information that we need a special commission to do this? Are you kidding me? So to me, I'm sorry, this sounds like Stonewall. Let's let enough time go by where people will just forget about it, and we'll create some ridiculous commission to study the facts that they've already got folks looking into. Why don't we move forward on appointing a special prosecuting attorney on this job? You know, and where, and this is a $64,000 question. Last week we had Bob Parker on the show to talk about this issue. This is the big deal here. Where is the insistence on backing up big trucks to each of these offices in every county in Missouri and have this equipment ripped out of these DOR offices and put the old equipment back in? How many people are going to be scanned between now and whatever time they decide they are not going to do anything about this issue? Obviously, we don't want that kind of equipment in Missouri, regardless of whether or not they like they've got something on the governor as to his complicity in the issue or not. We're not supposed to have that stuff in there anyway. Why aren't we getting it out of there? I don't understand.
That's a million-dollar question, Lisa.
Okay, and so now we've got a committee who's going to study this situation from between now and the end of September. I'm sorry, I don't understand why Republicans are not just foaming at the mouth to start impeachment proceedings here. They've got all the information they need to put an end to this. I don't get it. Well, here's one possibility. hats off to Liz Trent for sending me this video. This week I posted it around on Facebook. Take a listen to this. Let's see if I can get started.
And when you get ready to hire somebody, you need to check against the federal database to make sure the numbers on the cards aren't forged or real. But what really Congress needs to do is to use a biometric technology to create a new tamper-proof identification card for every legal foreign worker. That's what we need. We need a tamper-proof card.
That was George Bush. I think it was in 2006. The lead Republican at that time was talking, we need biometric identification cards to identify folks. Maybe that's why the Republicans aren't so eager to do anything about this issue. Maybe that's the plan. Maybe we're going to have identification cards on every American, and the Republicans and the Democrats are complicit. I don't know. I don't know what to think, folks. I don't know why people aren't hot under the collar. We need to be having protests outside the governor's mansion or something. We need to be having protests outside Tim Jones's house and asking him why he can't get off the dime and get something done about this. I don't understand. I just don't get it. Oh, and speaking of impeachment, I sat today and I listened to the hearings today, the Senate committee hearings, for the Benghazi thing. Did you hear those today, Cindy?
I did not get to listen to them, but I was following it on Twitter.
Oh, my God.
Pretty stunning. Pretty stunning.
It's just,
talk about impeachable offenses.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is anybody even saying the word?
You can't get them to talk about impeachment, much less treason. This is treasonous.
This outrages me, Lisa, because I think back to, I was alive and well during that time. I think back to the Nixon impeachment and the Watergate scandal, and it was bad. It was. I mean, they did some very wrong things, and he participated in the cover-up, and he ended up being kicked out of office. But it was nothing. We owe the man, if we do not impeach this president and some of the people who serve with him that he appointed, then we owe Richard Nixon an apology as a nation.
Yeah.
I don't really feel that we owe him an apology.
Exactly.
But if we are going to let this go, we have four Americans dead, one of which is a United States ambassador, and we have been lied to. They were sold out. They were, apparently the president of the United States was MIA during a huge, huge, serious event over in Libya where our ambassador and our nation, this is sovereign U.S. soil,
mm-hmm.
and we were being attacked by terrorists. And this administration has lied to us consistently from day one. There is a man right now in jail who produced the supposed video that caused this problem because he produced the video. And he's still in jail. He's the only person involved with the Benghazi incident that's serving time.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, and they even said today that the people testifying in the hearing today said it had absolutely nothing to do with the video.
Correct.
Had
nothing,
nothing to do
that
with it.
The video was part of their cover-up of what was really going on.
Right.
They were running guns. I really believe that. Our ambassador was involved, and he met with the Turkish
somebody
from Turkey. And I'm sorry, folks, my mind just went blank. The Turkish prime minister, and it wasn't 20 minutes after that meeting that they were under attack.
Right,
and we were funneling guns through Turkey to Syria to the Muslim Brotherhood, and this administration had the assets in place over there to go in and rescue our ambassador and those three men, the three other men that were in there with him, the part of his security force, and they all got stand down orders. That was made crystal clear today in those committee hearings.
Yep.
By people who are risking everything to stand up and tell the truth.
Yep.
And there needs to be an impeachment. There need to be people going to prison over this.
Yep. And none of them will.
Period.
None of them will. They'll all live very nice lifestyles for the rest of their lives.
Oh, and one of them's going to run for president in 2016.
Absolutely. They'll walk away scot-free. Nothing will ever touch them. I just can't even stand that. That drives me insane. Just drives me insane. I don't get it.
And it's really, that is really no different than what Jay Nixon has participated in the state of Missouri by violating the rights and security and liberties of the citizens of this state by what he allowed and signed off on after he signed a state statute prohibiting it from happening.
Right.
He violated the very law that he signed into law 7 months after he signed it. If that's not an impeachable offense, I don't know what is. Hello, legislators. Hello, calling all legislators.
Right.
Anybody listening? Is anybody paying attention?
It's
you have the smoking gun. What is your problem?
Right. It's absolutely. I got into an interesting Facebook discussion this week over it, and, you know, the legislators are worried that he's Teflon, that they can't make it stick, and they're worried that it'll look bad if they can't make it stick. I don't know how they couldn't make it stick. I mean, they're in charge of impeaching. They are in charge of impeaching the governor. It's their job.
Well, and once they start impeachment proceedings, they will even open up more avenues to more access to more information, emails, letters,
absolutely,
communications, et cetera, et cetera.
And you kind of wonder.
As that process goes along, it does, Lisa. It opens things up. I mean, we saw that with the Clinton
and maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe it opens things up, and maybe it blurs the lines on who's involved in this
thing. Maybe. Who knows? The legislature owes it to the people of Missouri to make something happen on this. We are being sold out. We are continuing to be sold out by our state government, by the governor of our state, by the Department of Revenue. Information that no one should have access to is being freely disseminated to agencies that should not have access to it. It's in violation of Missouri state statute. And it's not just about our concealed carry, like the gentleman that was on the show last week, Lisa, like he pointed out. This is about far more than just concealed carry. This is a blatant violation of our privacy as citizens.
Yes, it is.
And they are enacting something that the people of Missouri said, no, Real ID was shut down.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a document. They've got a document from the Department of Homeland Security thanking them for their participation in the program.
Personally thanking Jay Nixon, Janet Napolitano.
Yeah. I mean,
what more
you know,
do you need?
I don't get it. I just don't.
That's enough. That's enough to start impeachment proceedings and put the governor under oath.
Yeah. Speaking of selling out, here's another interesting little thing from our lovely Missouri representation. Let's talk about Roy Blunt for a minute. This week, our lovely conservative Republican senator from Missouri voted to enact the internet tax. I think it was like a 70-something to a 24 vote to send that through the Senate to go to the House to impose an internet tax.
Well, we all know what that's about, though, Lisa. That's about Republicans participating in tax increases on the citizens of this state to raise revenue for the state of Missouri. And I'm sure some of our good Republican legislators were probably had the ear of Blunt saying, we really need this.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm done with Blunt, all right? And I'm finished with that whole situation. There is a Facebook page. Everybody that's listening to this program tonight needs to go to the Facebook page. It's called Replace Ray. Replace Roy. Mm-hmm. Go to the Facebook page. Join the movement. And there's quite a few members on that page already. Just started. It's Replace Roy. Go there. Join it. Give us your ideas. Let's start vetting candidates now, folks. I mean, I think last week or the week before we talked about the Monsanto deal that he was in on. I mean, it is just always something. Now, I mean, he's going to be most egregious now because he's far away from his election. You know, as he gets closer to his election, he'll soften up and because people forget. They don't pay attention and they kind of forget. But I'm telling you, folks, I'm not sure that he's actually better than Claire. He and Claire, I think they're on the same playing field. I just, you know, if if we would have, you know, I just don't, God, I don't know.
He's no friend of conservatism. I had the opportunity to sit in on a meeting with him that he called with a few conservative leaders in the area in the 2010 election cycle, and it was nauseating. It was nauseating, and maybe someday we'll talk about that. But the man is no friend of conservatism, and I'm proud to say I didn't vote for him in that election.
Oh, good for you.
FYI. Well, I was done with him after that meeting.
Republicans, you know, they're either going to wise up or they're going to go down in flames, because there are going to be a lot of people that start voting for the third-party candidate. I mean, I am done, and I'm one of them. I mean, I just don't see that they're, you know, the argument that they're a better alternative to the Democrat used to be valid. I don't think it's valid anymore. You know, I don't. And as long as we're going to get a bad representative, you might as well vote for the third party and start working on third party candidates. I mean, I was never one to want to push a third party. It's going to take a very long time to get an established third party going.
You know, Lisa, if we're going to save our country through political process, all right, we're at a point now, this is just what I believe, that continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result clearly is the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
And if we do not, we're going to a bad place. And right now, both parties are taking us there. And no, you're right. Building a third party is going to be very difficult, and it's a very risky business. But you know, we're living in pretty catastrophic times as far as our nation goes and what we're facing. And it is clearly time to break the back of the political system that has a hold, the two-party political system that has a hold in this country, because they are the ones that are destroying us.
Yeah,
and they are complicit in their efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and they love to stand and throw stones at each other and call each other the schoolyard bully, when the truth of the matter is that they're both bullies, and they're both beating everybody up on the school grounds. That's what's really happening. Open your eyes, folks.
Yeah, it's time to start looking at other alternatives, because if we don't get something done here, we're going down the tubes. And Roy Blunt's not helping us. We got to get somebody else in. So anyway, go to the Facebook page and replace Roy, and start the discussion there. They're talking about candidates for possibilities there, finding ways to cultivate somebody who can run in a primary against this guy. Look for true conservative values, people to replace this, this very false image that most of these establishment Republicans are running on. It's just time to wake up and smell the coffee. These establishment Republicans are not getting the job done. We can no longer vote for them because they are the better alternative to the Democrat, because they're not. They're not the better alternative to the Democrat. We got to,
right.
And we got to put somebody else up in their place.
Right. And, Lisa, I just want to say something. To anybody out there that's serving in office right now that wants to be offended by what we're saying tonight,
that's tough.
Cool your jets. Here's the bottom line. If the shoe fits, wear it. If it doesn't, we're not talking to you, and we're not after you. So that's just the long and the short of it. If you're doing the right thing, you've got our support. If you're not doing the right thing, we're talking about you.
Right. Absolutely.
Where's that? And you know what? That's our job as engaged, concerned citizens to hold the people that we have elected to office to account. I don't have to mollycoddle them. I am not going to try to be their best friend. That is not my job. My job is to hold them to account for what they're doing and how they are or are not upholding their oath. That's what we have to do.
That's right. Yep.
And mollycoddling these guys and treating them and handling them with kid gloves, that's their idea about how they want it to be. Well, excuse me, that's not how it is, and that's not how it should be. Lisa, are you still there with us?
I'm trying to find my microphone. I'm sorry. I'm back.
Okay. We lost Lisa just for a minute there.
We did. I'm still trying to play with my technology to get my microphone back because we can't find it. Anyway, go to the Facebook page, folks. Take care of business there. Let's start finding a candidate. We got to get rid of Roy. He's not going to work.
And we've got 4 years till the next election to get him out of office. That's plenty of time to get the job done. And it would be a great way to send a message to the Republican Party and to the country that it is possible for the grassroots to find someone and get them across the finish line.
Well, you know, and I think this is an issue that we really need to take up in the senatorial race, because the establishment Republican Party really botched up the last senatorial race for us. I think it's time to take matters back into our own hands now and take control of this problem. So, you know, I mean, if we would have had Todd Akin in that seat where Claire is sitting now, at least we would have had another vote against the internet tax and probably a couple of other things as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you can find fault with all of these nitpicky little issues about how they, you know, answer interview questions on television, but really what it boils down to is how are they going to vote when they get there, and we know that Roy Blunt's not going to vote the right way. Okay.
Nope.
I'm going to beat that dead horse. Okay, let's take a quick break, and I think we have Bob McCarty holding on the line. Let's bring him back and talk about his new book. No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're here every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thanks for joining us. Tonight, we are so happy to have our good friend Bob McCarty with us. Bob, of Bob McCarty Writes. Bob, the author of 3 Days in August. Bob, the author of The Clapper Memo. Bob, the multitasking writer.
That's
Bob.
A mouthful.
How you doing, Bob?
Thanks. Doing great. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you on. I've been waiting anxiously for the release of this new book. You've been working on it for quite a while. You know, I mean, I talk to you off and on about these things, and you and I kind of converse back and forth, and I keep up with your updates that you send out about all the issues that are going on with these guys that are dealing with the government and the ridiculous corruption that goes on there. I mean, you're a great investigative reporter. You've done a lot of investigative blogging in the past on other issues, but all of these military issues, good God, I do not understand why people join the military.
Well, you know, as a former Air Force officer myself, I used to encourage young men who didn't really have a plan for their lives, didn't know what they wanted to do. I'd say, well, spend a few years in the Air Force or one of the other branches. But, you know, you'll grow up, you'll probably learn a skill, and by the time you're done with that first few years, you can decide if you want to get out and, you know, maybe have a college degree by then, or, you know, stay in the military. Maybe it'd becomes a career. But I don't make that recommendation much anymore because I don't trust the guys at the top to take care of the guys at the ground level.
Before we get into the Clapper memo, can you give us an update on your 3 days in August? How's Kelly doing? What's going on with him?
He's doing all right. You know, he's been out of prison since, March 2011, and he is now living on the East Coast working for one of his uncles in a business that kind of a cable TV / internet provider type of business. He's doing well. He would like to be, you know, he still has the sex offender tag on him for the wrongful conviction, but all things aside, you know, he's alive and looking forward. He's not in prison anymore, and he's looking forward to, you know, self-improvement and getting on with his life.
Was he able to reunite with his family?
He did, but it hasn't worked out real well, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
When you go away to prison, sometimes things fall apart. Not that I've ever been in prison, but, yeah, that's not a happy subject.
So it's pretty much just devastated him and ruined his life. I mean, I'm happy to hear that he's picking up the pieces, but what a change in direction for a highly skilled military man to be put just to totally have the knees knocked out from under him is, I guess, just kind of a minor. It's just an understatement to what happened to him.
He was, you know, he was in the top 1% of all the guys in the Army as the Special Forces medic / level one sniper, the top level sniper there is. You know, he had done everything right, didn't have a single blemish on his record until this former mental patient accused him of rape and kidnapping over in Germany. And, of course, in Germany, victims, so-called victims of sexual assault, get monetary payments from the government to assuage their, you know, their problems. And
right.
So it's really a cottage industry over there. Since I wrote the book, I've had so many families. I've got a stack of them, probably a couple dozen, in Germany, in Italy, in San Diego, you know, all over the United States, of their loved ones in the military, be it the brother, a father, uncle, cousin, you name it, nephew, and they're either in process of being wrongfully convicted or they've already been convicted on basically no evidence. These are cases where one civilian defense attorney said that 90% of the military sexual assault cases would never see the light of a courtroom due to lack of evidence. But they always see the light of a courtroom or a court-martial when they're in the military because people like Senator Claire McCaskill are on a witch hunt to convict men and demoralize the military.
Wow.
That's really sad.
It is horrible. Okay, well, let's move on to the next level of corruption, the Clapper Memo, your latest new release that you've got out here. Tell me a little bit. Well, first of all, what motivated you to write this book?
Well, back in April of 2009, April 2008, I saw an article written by a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, Bill Detman, for MSNBC, which is, you know, I'm fortunate that I saw the article because I never go to that site. You know, stumbled across it. But he wrote an article about the Pentagon getting ready to deploy portable polygraph machines to combat zones in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I thought, man, that was 2008. That would be great to have portable polygraphs out on the campaign trail to interview people like Roy Blunt, okay? But I was too focused on more serious politics and coverage, so I didn't write anything. But a year later, after the presidential election and the other elections were over, I said, I'm going to go back and see how that portable polygraph is doing. It had been a year, so in April 2009, I contacted the Pentagon, and as a former Air Force public affairs officer, I kind of know how things operate when a media person, which is now me, contacts the military. I know what kind of hoops they jump through, who they run the questions to. I asked, I think it's 9 questions to the Pentagon, and It took them 27 days to answer questions like, how well did the portable polygraph perform? You know, can it be credited with saving any lives? You know, just a bunch of pretty simple questions. But after 27 days of not getting answers, I got the feeling I was being stonewalled. And so along the way, I kind of got upset with having to wait that long, so I started talking with other people. And lo and behold, I stumbled upon a turf war, really a tech turf war that I doubt many Americans even know exists. It's actually been going on since about 1971 when a non-polygraph technology was invented by three former Army intelligence officers. Ever since 71 when they introduced what is the precursor to a technology that's now available, they've been the whipping pony for the polygraph folks in the military. And the Army is the U.S. government's lead agency for everything polygraph. So
what do they need polygraph machines for in the battlefield?
Well, ideally to interrogate the enemy combatants, other detainees, suspected terrorists, and also people that are called third country nationals from Nepal, Thailand, Philippines, all over the Middle East that want to work on U.S. military bases, you know, in combat theaters. So, you know, there's a lot of, you can use these, like right now, a lot of major corporations across America use pre-employment screening with a polygraph and with this other technology. But, you know, they deployed these polygraphs, but they're very unwilling to talk about them. When I contacted the executive at the company that makes these portable polygraphs, a company called Lafayette Instrument over in Lafayette, Indiana, he immediately said, you need to talk to Jeff Morrell. Jeff Morrell is the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs. He was the Secretary of Defense's public affairs guy, you know, the top spokesman for Secretary of Defense. And I thought, well, that's odd, you know, that he refers me directly to the Secretary of Defense spokesperson. So I said, okay, I'll go for it. I went ahead. I'd already been in touch with different Army folks. But I tried Morrell, and he, of course, said bounce back to the Army. But I went to the Army. I went to CENTCOM, which is Central Command in Florida. I went to Central Command, or ISAF, over in Afghanistan. Went all over the place looking for answers. But I also ran into these guys with this other technology. It's used right now by 1,800 state and local law enforcement agencies across the United States. But due to three memos that have been issued, one of which was issued by James R. Clapper before he became the Director of National Intelligence, these three memos, they ban anything but the polygraph to be used in DOD. Now, it's used by 1,800 law enforcement agencies across the state or the United States, but it can't be used in DOD. You know what? It was used even after the first memo. It continued to be used by some special forces guys, which required them to do the second memo, which was Clapper's. And then there's a third memo, which is Admiral Olson, when he was in charge of U.S. Special Operations Command. Now, do you think, why did it take three basically directives from top-level DOD folks to get the military folks to quit using it? Because they liked it. It worked. Now,
well, that's my next question to you. Well, what's the problem here? I mean, there a problem? I mean, it's not torture. You know, don't you kind of want to get this information from the enemy if you can get? Why is this a problem?
Well, you know, it really is funny. This new technology, and I'm not going to tell your listeners what it is, but it requires no contact with a subject. All it involves asking him questions. He has to give verbal responses. Okay. There's no contact with measuring pulse, heartbeat, respiration, galvanic skin pressure, any of the stuff like a polygraph. Now, in my book, I get information from the two guys who are the chief interrogators at Gitmo or Guantanamo Bay, mm-hmm. Okay? I get information from them after there was a two-month test down in at Gitmo using this new technology, and it worked fabulously, so well that the Defense Intelligence Agency person in charge of interrogations down there. He wants the company that makes this new technology entered into a 2-year contract at Gitmo. But halfway through the first year, the contract was canceled. The guy who brought in the contract was reassigned away from Gitmo, and the company and the contract was all, you know, killed in the water, even though it had worked so well. I've got a copy of an after-action report, which is, I detail it in the book, from one of those chief interrogators. I've got a to whom it may concern letter from another, where they detail how well it worked and compare it to the poor results they found with polygraph. I also interviewed a fellow who was a Green Beret, Special Forces. He had more than 500 interrogations using this non-polygraph technology over in Kuwait, Qatar, Iraq, all over the place over there. He used it to thwart theft rings, to thwart attacks, you name it. He and I detail all these stories. Now, he's one where after the first memo came out by Undersecretary of Defense Stephen Cambone. He was the very first USDI appointed by Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld. And he issued the first memo, and everybody in the field ignored it, such as this Green Beret, whose stories I tell. And when this Green Beret went to his bosses over there in Special Forces and said, well, this memo's up. Should I stop using it, or should I keep using it? They said, stop using it, wink, wink. And, of course, that meant keep using it. They kept using it for, he used it from 2004 to 2009. The first memo was issued in 2003, okay? So then Flapper's memo came out in 2007. They were still using it 2007 to 2009. And around then, Admiral Olson's memo came out. And that, as best I can tell, no one is using it in the military at this point. And the reason this is important right now is if anybody pays attention to the news, you hear about these green-on-blue or insider attacks in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
The reason those attacks are taking place, one of the reasons is because the vetting process we're using, kind of like you're talking about politicians, we've got to vet our politicians. We're not vetting the people who work alongside U.S. troops over in Afghanistan. And the Afghans, I spent 9 months trying to get to the bottom of the vetting process being used in Afghanistan, because I kept being told by Pentagon public affairs folks, both in D.C. and over in the combat zone in Afghanistan, I kept being told that the vetting process is an 8-step process, and it's Afghan-led and Afghan-owned. But eight months of getting the same answer, around the ninth month, I saw an article which had a photo, and the caption of the photo said, such-and-such Special Forces sergeant is shown interviewing Afghan applicants, and he expressed growing dismay over the vetting process that he was in charge of. And I said, I contacted the public affairs officers over there. I said, is this article right? Am I, you know, to believe my eyes and what I'm reading here? This guy says he's in charge of the vetting process of these Afghans, and he's a U.S. Special Forces guy. You guys have been telling me all along that it's an Afghan-led and Afghan-owned process. And they said, oh, sorry, we were sorry we told you that. They had lied to me for 8 months. And if we vet these people, the 8-step vetting process is really as good as in Afghanistan. Record-keeping really doesn't take place until someone goes into the vetting process. And, of course, they start building a dossier on each applicant. But for an Afghan to get approved, he has to have, you know, two village elders and an imam vouch for him. He has to submit to biometric records checks. And anyone over there, the first time they've ever had their fingerprints made or their retina scanned is by the U.S. military. It's not by, you know, anyone else. I mean, we're living close to the Stone Age over there. So to think how they have a taquilla, which is a an ID card, and most of them don't get one until they come through the vetting process. So if someone, you know, they supposedly check their Afghan ID cards, well, they don't have one until they go through the process. So, you know, it's not a real check. It's just a charade. So the 8-step vetting process doesn't work. Obviously, we've lost hundreds of troops have been either killed or wounded over there. Most of them wounded, but we've had dozens killed in the past 5 years since James Clapper signed his memo. That's when they first started keeping records, which actually now is 6 years ago.
Okay, so I don't want to get too close to the to give away anything in the book, but kind of sounds to me like there's a lot of hanky panky over there, and they're not really over there to find out the truth or to take care of our troops or to win the war.
Well, I don't think a lot of people in the higher positions in the Pentagon, that is the civilians, maybe a few generals. I think a lot of them. I question whether they were really out there to win the war or protect the troops, because too many people have been lost. The rules of engagement, which is a whole other book, are untenable. And for our guys to be over there, one day longer under these conditions is a crime.
Absolutely. Okay, so Bob, the biggest thing to come away with reading your book?
We need to allow our soldiers and, Marines, Air Force, all our troops in uniform and the intelligence professionals, we need to give them, at a minimum, the choice of equipment. A lot of them will choose polygraph because they've used it forever. That's fine, but they need to be given a choice. I think more of them will choose this new technology. And I interviewed the guy after polygraph failed when the DIA interrogators were interrogating Saddam Hussein's deck of cards, the top-level government officials. I interviewed the guy who went over there with the non-polygraph technology and had great success interviewing the deck of cards, okay? I've interviewed a guy who used the non-polygraph technology down in Mexico to help the Mexican authorities break up more than 300 different kidnapping cases by the drug and kidnapping cartels. It works. It can be done over the phone. Okay, it can be done in person, over the phone. It's
That's a little
scary. I'll tell you,
on
the cover of the book, if you go on my website, theclappermemo.com, I've got a cover. But since these photos on the website appeared, I've actually the book. When people order a copy of the paperback, they'll see three different endorsements, and one of them is by the guy who headed up. He was the chief investigative counsel during the Clinton impeachment hearings. He called the book, and I'm going to toot my own horn just a little bit.
Okay.
He calls the book the most thorough investigative reporting I have encountered in years. This is how it's done. I've got two other guys that I really cherish as having their endorsement. Larry Bailey, Captain Larry Bailey, he's retired Navy SEAL. He used to run the SEALs training program. He calls it an unconscionable cover-up. Another guy who used to be one of the senior military analysts on Fox News, General Paul Vallely. He highly recommends the book. He says, Bob McCarty has uncovered a high-tech turf war pitting those who want the best for our troops against others who seem to be focused on their own self-interest. Sadly, it seems the wrong people are winning this war. And, that's a two-star general. And head of the Navy SEALs training, and the guy who helped impeach Bill Clinton. Big endorsements.
Big stuff. All right. Like I said before, I don't know why people join the military, because some bad stuff goes on there. We're not taking care of our folks over there. Bob McCarty. So give me the website again, how to get the book.
Right now, you go to the Clapper Memo is the website. We had a glitch today on Amazon.com, so we're probably 24 hours away. The paperback is hard to get the next 24 hours, but I just received a bulk shipment of my own. You can get the Clapper Memo or 3 Days in August on Amazon.com, Kindle, and paperback.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bob McCarty. And don't forget to visit Bob McCarty Writes for those daily updates.
BobMcCarty.com. BobMcCarty.com.
Oh, BobMcCarty.com. Very good. Thank you, Bob. Sorry about that.
Thanks.
All right. Pick up the book, the page turner, and don't forget to get, if you haven't read his first book, 3 Days in August, get that one too. Thanks, Bob. We're going to take a break, and I think we have Tom Martz on the line, and we're going to come back and talk about some Yankee Doodle legislation.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Sport figures, soldiers, musicians, politicians, well, except for this one.
I am not gay. I never have been gay.
They have all come out of the closet proclaiming they are gay. Well, the old patriot has been seriously thinking about this, and I, too, would like to make an announcement right here on Gun Owners Minute. Yes, I'm coming out of the gun vault into the sunshine. I am giddy. There, I said it. I'm giddy over guns. Do you hear me, Obama? I'm giddy over guns of any kind. Hunting guns, targets, concealed carry, black powder, pink ones, black ones, shiny ones, big ones, little ones. And do I have the nerve to say it? Assault weapons. There, I said it. It's all out in the open for everyone to know. I am a giddy gun nut. Boy, that's a lot of pressure off my shoulders. Do you think the president will call and thank me for having the courage to come out? I'm getting giddy just thinking about that. Oh, wait. What am I going to tell my wife? Man, I got to think about this for a while. How am I going to explain my coming out to her and the kids? She thought my magazines I was hiding were just girly magazines. I'm going down to the gun balls and think this over. Maybe I came out too soon. I wonder if the NRA has a support group for this. This has been the old patriot. Battle on, America.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And we are here with Tom Martz of the Locke & Smith Foundation. We're together here tonight to do something that we like to do here often on Culture Vigilante, and that is point out ridiculous legislation that moves through the Missouri legislature. And nobody better to do that with than Tom Martz. Locke & Smith is a great organization here in the state of Missouri that is a watchdog for constitutionally conservative or just constitutional types of legislation and recognizes good legislators who support that kind of legislation. Thanks for being with us tonight, Tom.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Tom, legislative session is almost over. We're all singing and dancing, and we're happy. Can't wait for it to be done. Not too much damage has been done, although there's some that has gone through that's pretty ridiculous. But what have we got tonight that kind of classifies as Yankee Doodle legislation?
Let's go after the – I think this is the second one that we talked about earlier today. Eggs.
Oh, okay. Which number is that one?
Senate Bill 329.
Oh, that was the one I sent you. Yeah, okay, okay. Why? Okay, this one had me jumping a little bit today. We can't pass right to work. We've got a Department of Revenue scandal that we can't seem to investigate. We've got all of these hot-button things going on, and we've got a Missouri legislature talking about eggs?
Well, probably because somebody... their hot button is eggs, and they happen to be up in Jeff City, and we're not.
Oh, God. Do you have to be in Jefferson City? You know, we got a big state here. Does everybody have to be in Jefferson City to take care of business?
Well, I saw somebody earlier make the comment that we shouldn't have to, and I know this was, I don't know if this was said in a derogatory term, but
it might have been me.
Do we have to babysit those people who profess that they're going to follow the Constitution once they go up there? Because apparently with legislation like this, we need to do a serious checkup from the neck up to figure out what it is that we're doing.
I know. I don't understand it. Eggs.
Because when you take a piece of legislation that defines eggs, of course it did define eggs in the shell from chickens.
Yeah.
So we've
okay.
now Yeah, so now we've broadened that definition to the shell eggs of a domesticated chicken, a turkey, a duck, a goose, or a guinea that are intended for human consumption.
I'm so glad we have that cleared out.
Nothing about ostriches, nothing about emus. I'm not even too sure they even lay eggs, but, I mean, there are other animals that lay eggs that, you know, humans could eat. And I'm sorry, but I don't need my government, I don't need any government entity telling me which eggs that I can and cannot eat.
Okay. I mean, I just, you know, these kinds of things just almost render me speechless. I don't understand it.
Now, it does make me wonder, though, are we now going to start finding turkey eggs, duck eggs, goose eggs, or guinea eggs in the store?
Cindy, do you have
I'm speechless. I am utterly speechless. Is there a problem with my chickens that I'm raising and the eggs that we're getting?
I don't know.
Is there something I need to know?
They don't come out with a government stamp on them. I guess it's a problem.
When did we abandon personal responsibility and common sense for legislative oversight of everything in our lives? When did we do that?
Yeah, aren't there already regulations for poultry raisers and egg producers about how they have to operate their businesses?
Yeah.
You know, do we have to define eggs?
Yeah, but you remember.
And please tell me this bill didn't get a lot of airtime and didn't get a lot of oxygen.
It's truly.
It's sitting on the governor's desk.
And finally passed.
You're kidding.
No. It's been voted through both houses.
But we can't get right to work done. We can't do anything about DOR. We can't do anything about substantive regarding education and the huge,
right.
huge problems we're facing with Common Core and the data system. We can't get any of that fixed, but we can, by golly, we're going to know which eggs we can eat.
No egg on their face in Jefferson City. They've got
wow.
it.
I don't know if you guys remember, but a couple years ago there was an outbreak of eggs get salmonella.
Yeah.
And they tracked it back to an egg producer, I do believe, up in Minnesota. So the large egg producers all got together and they approached government and said, government, we can't provide clean, fresh eggs without you becoming more involved in setting guidelines and regulations to help us out in this avenue. And basically what they were trying to do from the get-go is they're trying to squeeze out the little guy.
Correct.
Who can't afford to comply with all these standards. And just the other day, somebody sent me an article in Britain. They don't wash the eggs.
No.
They literally go out and they pick them, they put them in a carton, they ship them to the store, and over in Britain, the country that has the most video cameras to watch the people, they allow their people to go in to determine whether or not the eggs are clean enough for them to purchase. And if they are, they'll take them home and they'll either wash them themselves or they won't, but they'll eat them. Because there is some sort of an antibacterial coating that the chicken, when it lays the egg, there's a film that's put on the outside of the egg. The egg is dropped. You can pick it up. You can put it in the carton. You can go in. You can just crack it and eat it. It doesn't need to be washed. It doesn't need to be sanitized. It doesn't need to be cleaned. That was done when it came out of the chicken.
Right.
Yeah. I don't get it. You know, this is nuts. People have been farming and raising their own. Cindy, you raise chickens. People
we do. We're raising chickens, and I can absolutely, I can validate what Tom just said about the eggs, because all of the books that we've read and the magazines and stuff to make sure that we were doing it right all said that we shouldn't be washing our eggs unless they have chicken poo on them. don't wash them. And then if you do, you have to wash them in warmer water, a temperature warmer than the egg, because there is a protective coating, and eggs are very porous, and if you don't do it right, you can actually, by trying to wash them and be super, super clean, you can actually introduce problems into the egg that wouldn't have been there otherwise. So there you have it.
There you go.
Now we have solved the problem with eggs.
Okay. Let's move on to the next great piece of mind-boggling legislation. Which one do you want to go to? Do you want to do SB 16, or do you want to do one of the others?
Oh, yeah, let's go SB 16, because it also was sitting on the governor's desk.
Okay. We're getting a little feedback from you.
Oh, yeah. This is a bill that defines not only what a child is, but it also allows, get this, it allows said child to work on a farm that is owned by his parents or someone in the family.
Absolutely. So how is this not an infringement on parental rights? Let me ask you that question. Go ahead.
What was the question?
How is that not an infringement on parental rights? If you are the owner of a family farm and you have children, how can you not have your rights infringed upon if the government dictates to you whether or not your child can obey your orders to go do chores on the farm?
Well, sadly, when I went through my government education classes, I was informed that government is there to protect and to defend and to determine what the people can and cannot do. It wasn't until I actually started researching on my own that I figured out that, you know, I as an individual have rights to do just about anything I want, in so long as I am not infringing upon another's right to do the same identical thing.
Yeah.
And if I want to have, and I'm going to use Cynthia Davis for this, you notice this is only a family farm.
Mm-hmm.
But I would bet it's illegal for her, or she has to jump through hoops in order to allow her kids to work in her bookstore.
Hmm.
Or in a restaurant. Or
yeah.
Any business that is owned.
Yeah, this country was founded on family businesses where kids helped out at home, where the families worked together to build their businesses. And look at what Missouri's done to them.
Well, as a matter of fact, that's why we started out with summer vacations and spring break and so forth and so on, was to accommodate the need for children to be at home to help with the farm chores during critical times,
right?
During the growing season. So, you know, the very things that are part of our school system today, which are being done away with, is, you know, we're there to support the fact that these children were part of a family that needed them and needed their participation at home.
Hey, we've evolved away from that document, Cindy. You're way behind.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's a living, breathing document. I don't know why there's a problem with that.
Wow.
Evidently, the state of Missouri's constitution is living and breathing as well. I'm glad to see it's alive and well. Okay. Okay. Let's go to some bills that have not been truly agreed to yet.
Let's go to this HB 813, and I would like to listen to your Common Core show, so if you don't mind, let this be the last Yankee Doodle legislation, because Common Core is much more important than YDL.
All right.
This one just absolutely boggles my mind. We are, the state is going to pay the sum of $8 million per year to the Missouri Department of Economic Development, which is known as DED, for the sole purpose of paying such funds to no more than five, as in the amount of fingers that you have on one hand, early stage business development corporations, which are Missouri not-for-profit corporations, designated
mm-hmm.
by the Department of Economic Development.
Okay.
So apparently we have so much money that we can give all kinds of money to Missouri not-for-profits that are in the early stage business development corporations.
Sure. And you have a problem with that, Tom, because?
Well, number one, it doesn't say where this $8 million is coming from. Nowhere in this piece of legislation does it point that out.
And speaking of Common Core, the money that it's going to cost, I mean, the way the budget's going to be driven up next year, there's going to be a huge budget deficit with the implementation of Common Core, so the budget issue is huge.
Well, how would we know? Because no one has ever figured out or no one has ever said what the budget to implement Common Core was even going to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, after the money runs out, absolutely. If it's like 300-something bazillion dollars, million dollars, we'll have to – somebody will know that. I bet Melissa will know that. We'll ask her.
But I could have swore I heard on the radio the other day that the I think it was secondary education, though, that they ended up getting more money than what Governor Nixon requested.
Well, okay, so, but you're saying with this bill, 813, our government is doling out the dough to these nonprofit organizations as startup organizations without a plan for from where the money will come.
Yeah, and only five.
I'm sorry?
Only five of them, though.
Okay, and the picking winners and losers kind of sounds like China Hub.
Well, it doesn't list any of the. They're discussing that an ESBDC is a Missouri not-for-profit corporation designated by DED as a recipient of funds under this section that provides grants to winners of a national or international competition for early-stage businesses with substantial operations in Missouri or that are going to locate to Missouri.
Oh, that's a little scary. They don't say anything about what kind of businesses they are. They could be gambling operations. They could be anything.
If you have to set this kind of a worm out there to get a fish, apparently you need to look at more things on the state level to figure out why it is that corporations aren't moving here. And it has nothing to do with right to work. It has nothing to do with Common Core. It has everything to do with the way our tax policy is manipulated and how our insurance policies are mandated. There is nothing in this state that government doesn't control.
Right, and including the eggs.
Yeah, including eggs and whether or not your children can work on your farm or not.
Okay, tightening of the noose. I feel it.
Wait a minute, don't we have a supermajority?
Supposedly? Oh, that's right. We have it. Yeah, that's not going to be a problem.
Oh, is this happening? Just thought I'd ask.
We'll just leave
Seems
that up
like
to the Republicans.
Question.
They'll take care of it, yeah, because the conservative, smaller government kind of thing. Yeah, got it. Okay.
What is it, Days of Our Lives? It has that, like, sands through the hourglass. These are the days of our lives. Well, these are the days of our oppressive government.
Yeah, well, just wait till they start kicking your doors down and taking your guns. Okay.
Now they're going to complain that although we have a supermajority, that's not enough. We need a super majority, and then we'll finally get something done.
Yeah, they're already starting to talk about that because Tim Jones, I think, has already started campaigning. But, you know, we have a problem. We can't get anything done because we don't have a governor who's a Republican. So that's their excuse. The supermajority is not good enough. We have to have a Republican governor as well.
I'm going to give a hat tip to Governor Nixon. Governor Nixon vetoed the, I can't remember the bill, but it implements a sales tax on vehicles purchased outside the state of Missouri once they're brought into the state of Missouri. This is like the second year in a row.
Oh, did he already veto that bill?
Yes, he did.
Okay, that one already went through. Yeah, because I read about that last week, and I hadn't heard about the outcome of that, but that one's done again.
Yeah, he beat it again. So when he does something right, you got to give him kudos. When he does something wrong, you got to hammer him for it.
Yeah, well, we can give him kudos. I still think he needs to be thrown out of office for the gun registry thing. Okay, Tom Marks, Lock & Smith Foundation. How do we find Lock & Smith, Tom?
LockandSmith.com. Lock is spelled with an E. It's not a master lock. It is for John Locke and Adam Smith.
Okay, very good. We'll have you back again real soon. We're at the end of the session. We'll do a legislative wrap-up.
All right, good deal.
Okay, thanks. Let's take a break.
Thank you.
And we'll identify all those callers that are on the line for our Common Core panel, and we'll talk about the Delphi technique.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems a certain voodoo priest who... will have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. They're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is Culture Vigilante. And we're here every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and we're here to fight for Missouri issues and issues across the country that affect Missourians as well. And tonight, as we promised, we have an entire panel in the studio with us tonight of folks from across the state of Missouri who have been outraged and motivated enough to attend what is amounted to little more than a spin session last Thursday night from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to explain to the citizens of Missouri what Common Core Standards is all about from their perspective. And what we found out, or what we learned from that session, was that they weren't really, not that it's a surprise to anybody, of course, but they weren't really interested in getting your feedback or having you participate in the discussion. They were more interested in helping you come to certain conclusions about what Common Core, they were going to lead you to a conclusion about how nice and fluffy and cozy and warm Common Core Standards is, and it's going to be for your kids. Much to the surprise of the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, it just, you know, the meeting didn't turn out to be quite what they thought it was going to be. People are starting to push back a little bit. We have represented here tonight, we have six different people from across the state of Missouri who attended five of the eight different locations where meetings were held last Thursday night. Let's introduce them one by one. I think we have everybody's mic on, so if you can hear me, let me know. We have Van Harvey. Van Harvey attended the Lindbergh meeting in district in St. Louis area. Thanks for being with us tonight, Van.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks.
Van, what you've written some great pieces about that about the meeting this week. What is the name of your blog?
Blogodidac.
Okay, thank you. Been trying to pronounce that all week. Okay. Okay, blog.
It was me trying to get cute between autodidact and blog, and I wasn't thinking about having to say it.
Okay, well, don't worry about pronouncing it. Just go there and read Van's post because he has some great posts about it. Okay, and next we have Melissa Leach. Melissa is a former state representative from down in the Springfield area, and she attended the Springfield meeting. Thanks for being with us, Melissa.
I'm glad to be here, Lisa. Thanks for doing the panel tonight.
Oh, we really appreciate you guys jumping on. I know that you each have a lot to contribute, so we'll move on down the line. Scott Pinkham. Scott Pinkham was one of two people that attended the Hazelwood meeting last Thursday evening. Scott, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Lisa. Good to be with you.
And Elizabeth O'Fallon also attended the Hazelwood meeting.
Hi. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. And we also have Brian Bowman from the Cape Girardeau area. Is that right, Brian?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is the name of your blog, Brian?
RockinConservative.com.
There you go. Okay, go to also, if you have a chance, Google that and go to Rockin' Conservative, folks. Brian has some great posts about the meeting as well. And let's see, have I got everybody? Got Van, Brian, Stacy, Elizabeth, Scott, Melissa. We got everybody, right?
You bet.
Okay,
I think
great.
We're all here.
Okay. All right. Feel free to jump in, folks. We got a lot of people in the studio tonight, but you've each got something individual to contribute to this discussion, and we want to hear from everybody. Basically, though, and I've told this to the audience before, about, 13 years ago I was elected to the Francis Hall School Board. Okay, got a huge education in educational bureaucracy at that time. And the first time that I ever attended a district-wide meeting, it was run in much the same way of the meeting that you folks experienced last Thursday night. Education folks and government bureaucratic folks love to run meetings this way. I've attended actually some Agenda 21 meetings run exactly the same way. What they like to do is they like to supposedly ask for your intake on all of these
yes.
issues, and then they bring you together in a room and divide you up and assign leaders to your group so that you don't have
facilitators.
Divide and conquer.
Absolutely.
Divide and conquer.
And this technique is called the Delphi technique, and you can actually find out information about this on the Internet. This is a common technique that's used in all of these kinds of situations where they don't really – they want to kind of give you the impression that they're including you in the process.
Yeah, you have a voice.
But yeah, you have a voice, but you don't really have the opportunity to exercise your voice. And is it fair to say – from all of the six of you here tonight, that's what you experienced last Thursday evening?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm disappointed we let them get away with it down here in Cape.
Well, okay. Well, let's start with you, Brian. Well, okay, to lay the meeting out a little bit, okay, there's some video. I did there's an article up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org about the meetings and about the Delphi technique, and I did get some video from somebody at the Springfield meeting, I think, took some video.
I was actually sitting at that table. A former constituent of mine was the one that was taking the video, and she was just right to my right. And so that was pretty exciting.
Okay, so Melissa's in the video. You'll be able to see Melissa in the video. And basically what they did was they had a presentation set out and a format, and they had people telling you how great Common Core was and how they want this process to evolve over time. And,
right.
and then they broke you up into groups and asked you two questions. So, Brian, let's start with you because your meeting seemed to be the most complicit with the process going on there. What happened down there in Cape Girardeau?
Yeah, sadly, we were well-behaved down there. we arrived at the event, and we had a meeting the night before to try to get organized. We had a bunch of questions ready to ask. We had papers to hand out. We were handing out the Missourians Against Common Core flyers on the way in, and as I was standing there waiting to go in, I heard somebody say that you have to get assigned to a table, and I knew that wasn't going to be good. So we walked in. I saw that they had 15 tables set up, and it quickly determined that it was going to be a divide and conquer type method. We arrived at our table, sat down. There was a table recorder and a table facilitator. The piece of paper that they had was a two questions on the piece of paper. What do you like about Common Core?
Right.
And what questions do you have about Common Core? Not any questions or any thoughts about, do you have any problems with Common Core? No. So they went through their dog and pony show with a video and a speech by a gentleman whose name escapes me. They didn't care whether or not you could hear it. It was all muffled and jumbled. You couldn't hear hardly a word that was being said on the video. And you could tell they just didn't really care because it didn't matter. They had their outcome planned, and they had people at tables, you know, saying good things about Common Core, so they were able to walk away with all these great things that Kate is saying about Common Core and a few questions that need to be answered. So that was my first experience with Delphi Technique. I work in the car industry, and Delphi is a car parts manufacturer in my world.
Okay, Lisa, I would go ahead and echo him where the thing that really struck me with this our meeting was rather quiet too, but the thing that was crazy is that we all had to come to a consensus before anything
yes.
could be written down. And that, we had 6 to 7 people at our table, and how are 6 to 7 people supposed to come to the absolute consensus about everything we're writing down? And I don't know, I just, I knew a lot about Common Core, but I also blog. I blog for the Source and Path, so I kind of came in as a reporter sort of person where I kind of pretended to be dumb and asked questions. And I was amazed that any question we had about Common Core, our table facilitator couldn't answer, but she was very well-versed on all the benefits of Common Core. So I found that really interesting.
Let me just ask you, because it seems to be from the videos that I saw and from the questions that I've asked and the feedback that I've gotten from folks, that seems to be a common theme. They could not answer your questions. Would that be an accurate assessment from most of you folks? I'm kidding.
Well, they claimed to not be qualified to answer them, which I thought was crazy. We have a room full of administrators and representatives and people like that, but nobody is qualified to answer any questions on Common Core.
The answer that the lady gave at ours when after some persistent questions was I can't answer that in a public sense.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't answer your question in a public sense.
Maybe that was supposed to be an invitation to one of the side rooms with you, you know?
It was crazy. When they handed out the questionnaire, that was a laugh-out-loud moment. And I think people in general up to that point were voicing a few questions here and there, a few mutterings. But after that, it was very much, we don't want to go into a group. We would like some questions answered. Why are you not prepared to answer them?
Well, that was intense.
Well, here in Springfield, we were condescended to by the administrators and the school personnel that were there. In fact, several of our school board members were there. And you could hear them from around the room. It was just like, you know, can we please, you know, do the meeting, sit down, be quiet, you know. And it was just like, really? Are we fourth graders?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Apparently.
And
that's very typical of a lot of educational meetings. That's what I've found over the years. You know, they know what the outcome is that they want you to have as upon leaving the meeting. And so this is a part of the plan. You know, at our meeting in Hazelwood, we had probably 75, maybe 80 people there. 10 to 11 tables were laid out, and the same two questions, of course, were printed on our papers. But there was, in fact, a Hazelwood-appointed facilitator, Wonk, sitting with us. And she told us on multiple occasions, please hurry, we're running out of time. You should probably stop discussing what you're discussing, and you probably need to begin writing your questions right away. And more than likely, multiple questions will not be considered. But we very politely ignored her and let her know that it was very important that we talk about these issues. And thank God everybody at my table was like-minded. And she actually had to get up and leave a couple of times because she had no idea how to handle us and could not answer any of the questions that we had. But it was really remarkable. No question and answer period was offered, although I did get a good question in about the SBAC. It was cool. We had two video glitches, so right in the middle of the State Commissioner of Education explaining the benefits and the glorious wonders of Common Core, all of a sudden the video went dead. And then the facilitator of the meeting at large just said, well, we'll go to the next one. So we had two video glitches. But right from the beginning, the deceit and duplicity was just so rampant. There's no data is being sent to feds. It's not a federal program. It's completely state-led, completely state-run, completely state-initiated.
I kept hearing that, you know, it's not national. Well, how is something that's 45 states not national? I mean, whether it was done independently or not, which we don't believe that it was, but how is that not national? You know, it might as well be.
Yeah. So, and the reality, I mean, they basically, you were absolutely lied to in this meeting. I mean, they're telling you that it's not state-led. We know that it's not, or that it is state-led. We know that it's not state-led. You know,
The gentleman absolutely said and lied, saying that there is no data collection. If you go to ccsso.org, you can find all kinds of information about the data they're going to be collecting through this EIMAC program. It's right there on their website, and they stood up in front of us and lied to us.
Well, my facilitator at my table actually said we already collect tons of data. So that's how she reasoned that away, is that, well, we already are collecting this data. Why not, you know,
why not share it with
further?
Us?
Yeah, but just saying that, oh, well, that's an excuse because we already do this, so therefore this isn't a violation of any sort of privacy issue or anything like that.
In our Camdenton meeting about the changes in the FERPA law, nothing, you know, nothing about how you know, your HIPAA information becomes part of the education record. There was no discussion about that.
In the meeting at Camdenton, well, it was interesting because they said data collection is not required. It's not required. They used that word required. And I think the other thing that was so interesting was with the questions that were presented at the end of the night, every administrator that was sitting at each of the tables actually got to choose what they thought the best questions were, none of which really reflected what I thought or anyone else thought the best questions at the table truly were. They were almost like they knew what they were going to take, and then they say, "We'll take these back to DESE, and in a couple days, we'll have a fact sheet for you on the website."
Well,
can I comment before?
Sure.
The president didn't give you a participation ribbon.
Is that Van?
Yeah, I wanted to highlight that part of the meeting too, because they took the questions from the table, and it was interesting. They constantly read every part of everything that they liked about Common Core. But the questions, well, they didn't repeat any of the questions. They didn't repeat them over and over again because, you know, they didn't want to waste that kind of time. But, boy, for the things that you liked about, they could say that over and over and over again.
Well, I like how we all got participatory applause after, at our particular meeting, we were all applauded for, we had to clap for each individual table about what a good job we did giving questions and giving feedback, but yet they couldn't address any of our questions or give us any feedback. But yet we all got a nice round of applause, so we all felt good at the end of the evening. So.
Okay, I checked the
website today. There's no answers on there yet.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'd like to go down the line and get a consensus from the group one by one. So let me just go down the line. Okay, Brian, we already know that the Cape Girardeau crowd was pretty quiet and complicit, and you didn't have a lot of pushback at that meeting. How was the Springfield meeting? We have video on that, Melissa. So we know that you guys were vocal and you guys were pushing back.
If I could do this just real quickly, so especially if you're at the Missouri Education Watchdog blog site, if you go down to the part five, it's one of the video clips that isn't in a YouTube format. But part five, it's the great video clip where we had Mike Woodkey, who is the Region G area supervisor for DESE, and he's also on the 8-page list of supporters of Common Core. He was the presenter that night, and ironically, he also could not answer any questions. But he makes a great statement in there.
Yes.
That a gentleman to my left was kind of challenging him about the fact that they weren't going to answer any questions, and he challenged him. And Mike said, look, if you don't like the format of the meeting, you're welcome to leave. And Doc McDonald goes, oh, yeah, that's right. That's how you solve the problem. You know? And then Charlie to the right of me says, we'll be polite. We'll answer the questions. And he's still denying it. And he goes, finally, Wiki says, I'm not qualified to answer any questions. And this other lady at my table goes, then why are you here?
And Melissa, we know your meeting was very well attended. Brian, did you have a standing room only crowd in the Cape, or how was the crowd?
Yeah, we sure did. We had, you know, 15 tables with about six people at each table plus the two facilitators. There was probably another 10 people either standing or sitting around outside of those tables.
Yeah.
I believe some extra chairs were pulled up to tables. We had a full crowd. I'd say 80% of it was in opposition to Common Core. And unfortunately, we were very well behaved.
We
had a full house at Lindbergh. I think we had 150, 200 people there packed
in. Oh, that's a great turnout.
At which location was that?
At Lindbergh.
At Lindbergh, okay. And Scott, Scott and Elizabeth, how was the crowd at Hazelwood?
I'm guessing maybe 75.
Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of them were administrators, though.
Oh, many.
By the time
Q&A came, they left.
Yeah. We saw a lot of, my table itself had seven people, and of those seven, three of them were affiliated with the district, so.
Stacy, what did you experience in Camdenton?
It was standing room only. There were probably, I'm going to guess, 15 to 20 tables. They were all full, and so there were people standing in the back of the room. I would say at least a good 60-70% were against Common Core. People weren't shouting out or anything like that, but there was definitely resistance at almost every table. It appeared that the educated people were the people against it, and so the facilitators were learning from the people that went in to ask questions. The facilitators, I think, learned something that night. They had no idea. They've drank the Kool-Aid, and they know their talking points. But the people that went in that truly know what's going on, that was the interesting perspective for me, is I think they might have learned something that night from the people who were asking the educated questions.
When does
job security come into that? It's one thing to learn, but then I unfortunately, so many administrators and so many teachers, and I don't blame them for that, job security is always the question.
True.
So you have to roll with whatever wind of doctrine is presently blowing through town.
Well,
so
and then
there's an issue there.
They're also having classes on this constantly, because my brother's a public school teacher. He's a high school teacher in the Wright City School District. And, you know, they have these meetings all the time. I mean, you know, we're supposed to have full implementation by 2015, and I just think it's funny that, you know, of course they're going to believe what they hear, you know, in these meetings.
Well, my husband is a teacher, actually, in Camdenton, and that is true. I mean, I think that everything that they're indoctrinated to believe, it's so amazing to me being married to a teacher. My mother and father-in-law were teachers, and we're very plugged in with the teachers here. A lot of them are our friends. And it always amazes me when talking to teachers how very little they know about anything. I mean, they don't know. Yes.
I think a number of them are starting to realize how little freedom that they're going to have under
the
system.
So let me ask Scott, because I know Scott is a teacher. Scott, I'm getting reports back from teachers. I mean, from what I'm hearing, it's becoming more increasingly difficult for you guys to be able to do your job. I mean, you are on strict schedules and timelines, and there's no flexibility.
And we're crunching data all the time, yes.
Yeah, there's no flexibility for you guys to do what you need to do in the classroom. The reason that you hire good teachers is because they each have a style in relating to students and understanding their needs in learning. You know, and it seems like the influx of this bureaucratic curriculum and this bureaucratic management of education has taken that out of the classrooms and not allowed teachers. You're more robotic than you are doing your teaching, you know, using your teaching skills.
I think in a lot of cases that's so true. You know, we've talked so many times over the years about differentiated instruction. I'm certain that most of you know what that's all about, finding those ways to get through to each and every learner. But yet we're all being treated as though we are the same, and creativity seems to have gone out the window. You know, I've been in the classroom 22 years, when I first started in this profession, I started when I was 38, I had the luxury of teaching to the, I'm going to say, the bottom of the top of my learners. Do you know what I mean? If you have a top, middle, and lower level of learners, sometimes we have to look at it that way. I used to teach to maybe the bottom of the top. Now I'm teaching to the bottom of the middle. And it's a remarkable transformation that's taken place just in my 22-year career. Mm-hmm. And here we are, you know, I see every single kid as a gift from God. I see every single kid that has a plan from God for their life, but yet we are treating them as educators as though they were all the same. We are testing them as though they're all the same. And this is what blew my mind at the meeting the other day. You know, that according to the Delphi technique, they just deposited these thoughts into so many of the people's minds. And when people were reporting out from the table, what did we hear over and over again? Yeah, this is going to level the playing field. Yes, it's going to increase the rigor. Yeah, our kids are going to be college ready. Our kids are finally getting a break. And from my perspective, and maybe other folks will agree with me, the playing field could not possibly be any more level than it is with all the accommodations and redos and everything else that we allow to go on in the classroom. And actually, I see it kind of slightly worse than that. I think the playing field has been kind of scooped out. And what's really happened is we're creating a shallow bowl. It's no longer level. It's a bowl, and all learners are required to swim in it.
I don't think there's any playing left in the field. It is too regimented, too described to enable either students or teachers to do what they need to do. And that's the peril of top-down planning. It seems like such a smart idea at the top of it, but as you try to impose that on a large number of people, you regiment what they do. They can no longer think for themselves. They have no room to. There is no playing field. There is no playing on the field. It's march in line.
Unfortunately, that's one of the casualties of data-driven instruction. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, let me ask you, Scott, let's get back to that question again about the teachers. Okay, we know what this is going to do to the students. This is not, I mean, nobody in their right mind who's ever had a child, who's ever had more than one child, knows that children are different. You cannot do a one-size-fits-all education. It is not going to work.
No,
it's not about education. Okay, so, but the teachers, you work with teachers every day. You're in a building with teachers every day. The general attitude of the teachers, what are they thinking? What are they talking about?
I think, honestly, number one, a lot of teachers are surprised to find out that there is some division with some of us. But I think also, you know, and they're afraid because, you know, with the MAP test, which is always a moving target, my gosh, I have never looked at the thing for fear of losing my job in 22 years, so I have no idea what that's all about. Nobody has any idea what the Common Core standards are about. But I think what's happening, in my mind, I love to study faces, and I love to look around at during meetings, faculty, or whether they're, whatever's being taught at cooperative learning is the buzzword in our district this year. I see a lot of fatigue on faces. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I can't help but think that is so intentional because, in my mind, fatigue generates compliance. And then compliance, everybody just becomes in lockstep with the wind of doctrine that's blowing through town. So I think there's a lot of fatigue. I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions. And I'm certain that people really have no idea where to turn because, let's face it, most people that I know have checked to check. Teachers do as well. And, for fear of repercussions, vocationally and therefore financially.
It's
tough on teachers. And the people I work with love to teach.
If I may jump in here a little bit,
please.
Just from maybe a little bit of a legislative perspective and thinking through the whole end goal of Common Core, where a fifth grader is a fifth grader is a fifth grader, regardless of whether they live in California, Florida, New Hampshire, Missouri, or Minnesota, so they become interchangeable in the classroom. Well, the other side of that coin is Teach for America. And so if you have a teacher who is all gung-ho on Common Core, then by extension, they have to follow that same logic and go, oh, well, I support Teach for America, and I support, 6-week trained
subject matter teachers who are going to be here maybe a couple of years, 3 years, and then they're off to some, you know, policy institute.
Sure.
And so as I've talked with some of them, they've kind of looked at me very blankly, you know, at first, and then come back and gone, you know, that's right. We are the other side of that coin, and I think that's where you see that fatigue, because if you can get good teachers to comply, they're going to eventually follow their consciences and leave. And so then you're just going to have a revolving door in the schools. So a student's going to be a student, it's going to be a student. Well, a teacher's going to be a teacher as a teacher. And they're mm-hmm. all interchangeable, and there's no differentiation at all going on.
Okay. Well,
I think CSA already has the reputation for burning people out quickly and gathering, you know, having something to put on the resume, and then they move on.
Right.
Okay. Hey, Lisa.
Yeah.
I'm a homeschooler, and so one of my reasons for doing this meeting was that, you know, as a homeschooler, you know, we're kind of always in a state of flux. You know, we're always watching legislation, what's going to happen. And my concern is, like, you know, I took my kids out of the public school system because they didn't fit in the mold. And, you know, I have some special needs kids, and so we've been able to achieve those things at home in a smaller setting, and they just have excelled. But I don't see how these standards can be pushed across 45 states, you know, accepted in public schools and private schools and not affect me. You know, I know we've got a great homeschooling law, but I just, you know, especially when the standards and the testing is changing, how are we going to stay under the radar? I don't think we are.
Is this
you know,
Elizabeth or Stacy?
That was Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Okay, so, I'm a homeschooling mom, too, Elizabeth.
Me, too.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you're right. You're not going to stay under the radar. And that, you know, that is a point that I did want to bring up tonight too. Okay, homeschooling legal defense has been all over this issue. They have been all over this issue for homeschoolers. It is not, homeschooling is not exempt. Private schooling is not going to be exempt. Everybody's
right.
going to be under the same umbrella, because if any of us intend to track our
right.
kids into a college or
sure.
university, they have to be able to pass the college entrance exams, which will be aligned to Common Core.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, all the curriculum providers are starting already
to switching over to Common Core.
Yeah, I think they see the writing on the wall. They're like, okay,
sure.
well, if we don't accept Common Core, we're not going to be, you
well,
know.
And even in the colleges and universities that don't require an ACT or an SAT score, the problem is that as our homeschool kids and private school kids then mainstream with the public school kids into there, remember that all of the college curriculum is also going to be is Common Core aligned. So if you haven't been brought up in the groupthink, then you're going to have a hard time adjusting into college classes, because they're going to become more and more reflective of the Common Core methodology of instruction.
Well, you know, I'm not really as worried about that, because we already experienced that. Our kids are not aligned into the groupthink as it is, you know, and our kids typically perform better in colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Than they do now.
That's because they're independent thinkers, though. It's like
right.
if we move
sure.
towards a collective consciousness and a collective sort of approach to education that doesn't value those individuals,
right. And if your grades
do
depend
well.
On the group always, whether the answer is right or wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, remember that college, higher ed, is going to be aligned to the same, you know, concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I pray as. As a homeschool mom, this is my prayer, that what this will create is private schools, Christian colleges, private colleges that will have their own, realize that competition is good,
yes.
and that
yes.
they'll have their own set of entrance exams for my child that's homeschooled, or my child that isn't a part of the group thing. Because the problem is, when you understand the kind of math our children are being taught and how the MAP test actually grades or has scored those skill sets, which I don't consider skill sets at all,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it is hard for, I pulled my kids out, or two of them. I have a daughter in high school at the public school, and then I had a son go back to seventh grade this year, but I still have my little guy with me. And I just pray that the private institutions will align themselves with the freedom that we're educating, that we truly will output. I know that's sad to say, but the leaders of the future will be the homeschool kids that don't conform.
Right.
And hopefully we'll have a demand at the universities that are private for our kids, and they will be the leaders. That's my prayer.
Okay, I want to let Cindy have a chance to jump in here because she's had a question, and then I want to talk about legislation. Go ahead, Cindy.
Thank you. This is Cindy. I'm sitting with Lisa tonight. You guys are all awesome. You just rock. I think it's awesome that you went to these meetings and you're able to report. Thank you. One of the things that occurred to me listening to this, and I've really seen this with Common Core, and I was a homeschool teacher also many years ago, but I think what concerns me is that I see, and maybe you guys can give me some feedback here about what you think about this, but basically what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a system now that is being put in place that is out to destroy traditional teachers. And I'm talking about the good teachers.
Yeah.
Don't want them because what they're really trying to do is to create a national workforce and to drive our children into careers of the government's choosing. And
right.
I think that's
yes.
ultimately where we're headed with this.
Human assets.
Absolutely. Yeah. They are the human capital that the stakeholders have an interest in. And that language is theirs, not mine.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty much been the game plan since about 100 so years ago.
Exactly right.
It's now becoming more and more explicit.
And
there's something else, if I could jump in just for a second. Something else that I think I've talked about this for the longest time, and people just think I'm nuts. But in addition to the government winning as they develop human assets, and human assets, of course, the future taxpayers, and that keeps the revenue base going. You know who else wins big time in all of this? The publishers.
And the technology giants.
We are talking about hundreds of billions of dollars that are to be made as a result of Common Core. And, of course, you know our math test. My gosh, that's not printed here in Missouri. That's printed in California by McGraw-Hill. Every single day on my email account at school, I get some sort of program that's for sale that's aligned to Common Core curriculum. The other day I got one about Common Core state standard bell ringers. $100, and if you don't know, a bell ringer is something that can engage the kids while you're taking attendance and doing your meet and greet, and it's just something to get them thinking about today's lesson. Well, $100 per grade level, K through 12. That's one company. We got material called in an email about Kagan materials today. And these are cooperative learning manipulatives, and cooperative learning is the big wind of doctrine blowing through town. And by the way, at our professional development this year, we learned, I think, either 28 or 30 different structures, which, first of all, have to be taught in class so the kids can successfully utilize these in class to implement true cooperative learning. And then just today, something from Great Educators, Common Core, State Standards, Curriculum Mapping. It's a group of consultants which will come into your school for untold dollars and who will spend time with your different departments and align your present curriculum so they just remove the sweat and the agony for you, all for a fee, of course. So,
right. So there is absolutely no doubt. There is, education is not about education anymore. It is an industry, and there is money to be made, and that's why this is pretty much moving forward. But, okay, but we're running a little bit short on time.
That's okay,
and we can do this again. This has been fabulous. But I want to talk about the legislation that's pending. Okay, we've got a couple of pieces of legislation that are in the legislature now. We've got SB 210, which is up for a hearing any day now, and you can go to Missouri Education Watchdog and sign a witness form to support that legislation if you like.
Been there, done that.
And I'll also post that up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And we've got HB 616. Now, okay, funny, here's the situation, folks, with these two pieces of legislation. The one with legs, the SB 210, is the legislation that does absolutely nothing to really stop Common Core this session. It brings a little bit of accountability, maybe a little bit of transparency into the issue. We have a huge bureaucracy, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, which is running the show, and it kind of makes them jump through a few hoops, But it's a stonewall piece of legislation, I think. I think that if the legislature really wanted to stop Common Core, other states have done it this year. Missouri could have done it, but they ran into some stonewalling, and they're not going to get it done this year. We're getting some feedback, buddy. Anyway, there's another piece of legislation, HB 616. Homeschooling the Defense is supporting it. I just got a thing in my inbox today from FreedomWorks. They're supporting it. All of these organizations from across the country are supporting this HB 616, which has gone nowhere. We want you to get behind both of these pieces of legislation. I don't think 616, I think 616, they're going to kill it. They're not going to allow anything to happen to it this year. The legislature does not want to stop Common Core, and that's very clear. They have given
us...
What I want to say about these pieces of legislation is, folks, they're both important, okay? You've got something going on here with the legislature. They're not ready to stop Common Core. They need to hear from the folks. I would encourage you to go and sign the witness forms for 210. Let them know that there are a lot of people out there who are watching this situation, and they want Common Core to go away ultimately. If you're going to throw us this bone of 210, we'll take it because it does provide some transparency. It does provide some accountability to the Department of Education, which has done nothing up to this point, really, to be accountable to the citizens or the legislature because they brought Common Core in here without their approval. But support that. Let them know that you're out there. They need to hear your voice. But also support HB 616 because HB 616 is the legislation with the teeth in it. Okay, Melissa, go ahead and make your point.
Okay, the Senate Bill 210 actually halts implementation until after DESE completes all of the 8 congressional district meetings again, and those have to be done by December 31st. Then they have to make a report. So it does halt implementation. Now, will that word get down to all of the individual school boards and the individual schools in this state? Probably not. So it's really going to be incumbent upon the residents of the school districts to go to their school boards, go to their schools, and make sure that no Common Core standards in English or in math or in social studies or in science are being implemented now. So that they stay where they are and they're done. Nothing else goes forward until DESE is transparent and accountable. So I really think that at this point, because the education lobby, the special interest of education, you've got the Missouri Association of School Administrators, you've got the Missouri NEA, you've got MSTA, and it just runs the gamut. They can just keep going. It is an industry. They're a very big industry. We have a constitutional mandate to fund education in this state, so it's a priority. So it is a big, big machine in Missouri. This is about as good as we could get because this gives us that opportunity for transparency. We get to find out what the costs are. We get to find out about the data mining thing. Then we can go from there because there's a lot of people in this state that know nothing about this yet, know nothing about it. So our job over the interim is to get out there and educate, go to meetings, make those talks, go door to door, go to those school board meetings, go to your neighborhood meetings, go to your co-op meetings, go to your church meetings, everything you can between now and the end of the year to educate and make sure that, you've shown up at one of those congressional meetings.
Right. So. Okay. I want to thank everybody for being on the panel tonight. I appreciate everybody's time. I told you I was going to keep you for half an hour, and we've almost used the entire hour, and I really appreciate you folks coming on and letting us pick your brain.
Thank you, Lisa.
This.
It was fun.
Okay. Before
thank
you go,
thank you.
Melissa, you have a radio appearance tomorrow morning. When is that?
I do, 7 to 8 on KSGF, which is 102.1 here in Springfield, or you can listen streaming at ksgf.com from 7 to 8.
And, Van, tell me about your blog one more time.
Blogodidact.
Okay,
On education in general.
WordPress, blogodidact.com?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Blogspot.
Blogspot, okay.
So blogthedidact.blogspot.com.
And I think we lost Brian a while ago. The Rocking Conservative, look for The Rocking Conservative. And who was it that blogs for The Patch in Florissant?
Elizabeth, I blog for Florissant Patch, and I'll be probably this evening or tomorrow posting my comments and thoughts on our meeting with Common Core last week.
Excellent. Did I leave anybody out? Go ahead.
I would say Brian's blog has some really excellent questions on there that if people pick those up and pass them around among themselves, we can get a little dull roar going here.
Excellent. Yeah, he's done some great. He had a great post right after the meeting the other day. Have I left anybody else out? Has anybody else got something to plug?
No, not I. Just love teaching in the classroom.
Thank you for your work today, Scott.
You bet.
Thank you, Stacy.
You're welcome.
Everybody, we really appreciate you coming in. We will maybe try to do this again as time goes by, and
okay.
We always appreciate your input. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Okay, I think we're going to wrap it up. We're almost at the end of the show here. I will post the link to that witness form on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org so that you can go there. And Cindy will be in the chair next week. I will be out speaking to somebody's meeting, and I can't remember who it is, actually. We'll be out speaking to a group on Common Core at the Merrimack Township next week during the show. But Cindy will be in the chair, and we'll have a good show lined up for you next week. And I think we're about there. Huh. Got anything else to add, Cindy?
Nope, that was a great panel discussion, and I think that we need more of that. And I think that everybody had a lot of good ideas, and I think it's a jumping-off point. And I think the most important thing, my biggest takeaway, Lisa, really, is that there is momentum building in the state. And, yes, there are a lot of people who are uneducated, but I think that the number of people that were showing up at these meetings is a significant statement to the fact that the grassroots is still very much well and alive. And
ready
to strike back.
Yeah, and I really wanted to be able to show that it wasn't just in one area. We had people from all, you know, from most of the different meetings across the state. They were all reporting most of the same things, getting the same kind of information, getting the same stonewalling and bulldozing going on. And folks, you're not being told the truth about this. So, again, we've talked about this in the past, and I'm going to talk about it again. You need to go out. You need to do your homework. You need to go out there and pull one more person inside the Patriot bubble and tell them about what's going on here today. You need to start educating outside of the Patriot bubble and stop talking to the choir and go outside of the comfort zone and educate folks. So I will be out there next week doing that. Cindy will be here. Go out and spread the word about Common Core. And come back here next week at Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here and listen to Culture Vigilante here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks so much, and we will talk to you again next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check out our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.